Is alive.
Hello, listeners. You're listening to whatever the hell I call this radio, episode 5. Today's date is July 22nd, 2005. Tonight's topic, wireless insecurities. Going to be talking about some, 802.11b, your conventional wireless networks, and going to also go on to some other things like, say, infrared, maybe talk a bit about Bluetooth. Also, this show is available for download at www.podcastincubator.com/ragweed. That's www.podcastincubator.com/ragweed. Well, to start off, we're going to talk about what type of network a home user would use, a typical consumer. They generally use a wireless networking standard that fits in the 802.11x sort of a genre, I guess you could say. There's mainly three different types that are used. There's 802.11a, 802.11b, 802.11g. Now, 802.11a is by far the least used in comparison to B and G. Alright, now 802.11b is by far the most popular. 802.11b operates in the 2.4 gigahertz range. Now, some of you more inquisitive listeners, or more astute listeners out there might recognize that a lot of cordless phones run off or run in the 2.4 gigahertz range. Now, this can in some cases cause problems. However, with 802.11b, you can select on more specifically where in the 2.4 gigahertz range you want it to operate in. So, for example, let's say that you had a phone, a cordless phone that operated at 2.417 gigahertz. Well, now you want to make sure this phone doesn't interfere with your wireless router or wireless AP, wireless AP standing for access point. Now, what you can do is, oftentimes in your wireless router, you can select on what channel you want it on. So, for example, if your phone operates on 2.417 gigahertz, that's channel 1. However, you could set your wireless router to operate on 2.442, channel 6. Thus, you could eliminate the problem with the phone interfering with the wireless network and vice versa. 802.11b also operates at a speed of 11 megabits per second. However, it's never a true 11 megabits per second connection because with wireless, there's a lot of overhead and also there's a lot of noise, like I said, with cordless phones and things like microwaves. So that is one reason where 802.11a might be more desirable. Let's say you've got, it's a car dealership or something and you want to run a wireless network. But also, you've got all your salespeople out on the floor, and they're all communicating with these wireless devices that operate at 2.4 gigahertz. Well, in this instance, you might want to use, 802.11a, because you aren't going to have the interference from the 2.4 gigahertz phones, because 802.11a operates on the 5 gigahertz range. Now, 802.11g is very similar to 802.11b. And because of this, 802.11g is also backwards compatible with 802.11b. Now, with 802.11g, you actually have a faster throughput than 802.11b. With 802.11g, you actually have a throughput of 54 megabits per second. However, like I said, it's never going to be a true 54 megabits per second because, as always, you have overhead. Now, 802.11g manages to get this greater throughput through a technology known as OFDM. And also, 802.11a as well uses this technology to achieve a throughput of 54 megabits per second. Okay, now, that sums up for a bit the basic wireless home network type devices. Now, as far as securing your home networks go, you have a couple different options. You can do MAC address filtering, And with MAC address filtering, you basically define in your router a list of specific NIC cards, network interface cards. You statically list each NIC card that you have that will be connecting to the network. And if you have a NIC card, let's say I've got my NIC card and I try to connect to your wireless network. Well, if my NIC card doesn't match that list, then I won't be able to connect. However, let's say I manage to obtain your NIC card through some means. I can spoof my MAC address, which is basically manipulating my MAC address to show up as something else, so I can have my MAC address, say, show up as your MAC address, and therefore I would be allowed on the network. Now, there's also other technologies you can use, such as WEP. Now, WEP stands for Wireless Equivalent Privacy. Now, with WEP, what WEP does is you give, say, your router a passphrase or something, and what it does is it takes this passphrase and it generates what's known as a WEP key. Now, with this WEP key, it encrypts all data that's being sent over the wireless network. Now, also, you on the side of the NIC cards and all your hosts, you have to tell them what the WEP key is. That way they can sign on and associate with the network. Now, so I tell my router, okay, here's a passphrase, generate the WEP key. This is the WEP key. Tell my host, this is the WEP key. Now what they do is when they send information, it gets encrypted. And when they receive the information, it gets decrypted. Now, that way, if I'm just sitting out, I pull up in your driveway, I got my laptop, wireless NIC card going, I cannot simply go in there and start sniffing all your data. However, because this is wireless and the information is just going everywhere, it's just being broadcasted, I can crack the WEP key. Now, generally, cracking the WEP key takes quite a long time. There's a few tools out there that'll do this for you. Those tools being the most popular being for Linux, AirSnort. The URL for AirSnort is airsnort.shmoo.com. That's airsnort.shmoo.com. There's also another one called WebCrack, and that's webcrack.sourceforge.net. I personally haven't used WebCrack, however, I have used AirSnort. It's pretty interesting how AirSnort works. Basically, what AirSnort does is it sits there and, like I said, since all these packets are being broadcasted everywhere, it captures these packets out of the air and logs them to a file. Now, AirSnort looks for what are known as special packets, and these special packets happen to be very weak in their encryption. So, let's say I'm gathering all these packets. Let's say I get these special packets. So, now, however, these special packets don't come along all that often if, say, it's not being used. Let's say, you know, I've got my router, and I only use it maybe, you know, once, twice a day. I'm not going to generate a lot of special packets. However, let's say I'm some big business, and I use the same WEP key for every single thing. And let's say my whole business is wireless. Everything's wireless. Big Fortune 500 company with a ton of wireless stuff. I'm going to generate a lot more special packets. Now, if you're wondering, well, how many special packets do I need? Well, it's a very simple answer. For 64-bit encryption, you need 2. For 128-bit encryption, you need 3. Now, however, let's say I don't want to sit around all day and leave my laptop because, you know, security guards come by and, you know, they might see me there and, you know, they might kick me out of the kick me off the premises. There is a couple of things you can do. Want to crack the WEP. See, one of the problems with WEP is that if you have an already encrypted packet, you don't have to know the encryption key just to send that packet back in on the network. So, let's say I capture a packet, right? And, you know, doing some, you know, analysis of the packet and whatnot, I determine that it's, you know, an ARP packet or whatever. Well, I can send these packets out and I can say, hey, all right, this is my packet, and then I can have the wireless AP generate a response to that packet. Now, okay, so you're having the wireless router generate a response. Big deal, right? Well, no, because if I'm sending out this packet, and let's say I'm doing this 1,000 times a second, I'm generating 1,000 new packets every second. Now, in those 1,000 packets, you mean there's not a very good chance that one's going to be special, but when you're doing it over, say, 1,000 packets a second, you go for a minute, that's 60,000 packets. That's a lot of packets. I mean, that's just 1 minute. Now, at that rate, there's a very good chance you're going to get the web key. However, this going at such a high rate can sometimes cause the router to get DOSed, which DOS, denial of service attack, and this could possibly trigger an alarm. It could do a lot of things, or it could also just shut the router down, the wireless AP down, which would obviously not accomplish your goal because you want to get into the network. You don't want to just bring it down. All right, now as for tools that allow you to do this, there's one tool that's known as Air Replay, and it's available within a security wireless security tool suite known as Air Replay. This is available for download at www.cr0.net /8040/code/network. And from what I see here on this website, it is available for Windows and Linux. That's www.cr0.net:8040/code/network. Air Replay. Now, other methods of securing a wireless network, one of the methods is LEAP. Now, LEAP is a Cisco proprietary protocol. Basically what LEAP it does is it uses an authentication scheme with a user password combination. So that's basically what LEAP is. Many times you might have seen LEAP used in a place like, say, Starbucks or Borders, where they're going to actually charge for wireless internet access. So you know, they want to make sure that you authenticate with the servers, that you know you're not just going out there and you know using their internet connection without paying. All right, now I want to talk a little bit about a thing which I find very enjoyable, and that's wardriving. If you haven't heard of wardriving before, basically wardriving is it's going out and actively looking for wireless networks. There's a couple different tools you can use. The most popular Windows tool is NetStumbler, and you can get that off of netstumbler.org. And for Linux, Kismet. Personally, I like Kismet. That's available off of kismetwireless.net. With wardriving, basically, get a car, get a laptop, get a wireless NIC card, possibly an external antenna, which is a really good idea to have an external antenna, and you go around driving looking for wireless APs. In my findings, I found that basically about, you know, a third, oftentimes even less, of the wireless APs out there are not encrypted. Now, this is a big problem, because if you're using, you know, let's say a wireless AP to do all your, you know, internet commerce, all your e-transactions and all that, your credit card, I mean, if all that data that's going out there, I mean, you could have credit card data flying offline, you could have personal information, I mean, you could have so much stuff going out just being broadcasted everywhere for anybody to pick up. I mean, on top of that, it's a huge security security risk to have. I mean, say, you know, your social security number gets out on there. I mean, someone can get all your docs just because you didn't go through and, you know, click enable a couple of times and then, you know, sign it to WebKey. Now, of course, you know, like I said, web is not a totally, you know, secure means of hiding your data and keeping others from accessing your network. But it does help, because, you know, security, you cannot be totally secure. Security, it's like a process. You can keep doing more and more and more. You're not going to be totally secure, but the more you do, the better off you are, the more secure you're going to be, and the less vulnerable you're going to be. Yeah, so back to wardriving. Now, when you wardrive, obviously, you've got to have a wireless NIC card. Well, there's a couple different types of wireless NIC cards out there. The most popular being the Orinoco Golds and the Cisco Aeronets. Me personally, I own a Cisco Aeronet. I love it. I'm happy with it. It's supported natively in the Linux kernel for anything 2.4 and above. And it also runs on Windows fine. It runs on Macs fine too. Now there is, however, the Oracle Golds. You have to be extremely careful when you buy an Oracle Gold, because there's two types. There's the Proxim Oracle and there's the Classic. You want to get the Classic because the Proxims suck. The driver support is terrible. Not a bad card if you're a Windows user. Me, I'm not a Windows user. I like to use alternative operating systems. So if you want to do something like Kismet, not a good idea to go with the Proxim because, well, they suck. And now there's a couple different ways that these war driving programs work. Kismet is what's known as it passively monitors things. Basically, what you do is you set your wireless card. It sets it into what's known as monitor mode. And in monitor mode, oh no, it's the feds. Actually, it's just my dog coming to my room. But anyways, yeah, Kismet, it works in what's known as monitor mode. And it sets your card in monitor mode, and then basically it just logs everything that's out in the air into a file. Well, it logs them into files, and it also displays it to the screen. Advantages of this is that you can detect wireless APs that are a lot farther away than you would with another tool, which I'll talk about in a second, called NetStumbler. With Kismet, the advantages, you'll get the longer, you'll be able to detect networks farther away that might not be within a reach for you to send messages, but you can receive them. And however, a disadvantage of it is that you will not be able to detect cloaked SSIDs. Now, I didn't talk about cloaked SSIDs before, and basically what cloaked SSIDs are, they're wireless networks that don't broadcast their SSID. Now, if you don't know what an SSID is sort of like its name. Basically, it's not going out and telling everyone that, hey, I exist. Instead, you have to go out actively looking for it. There's a chance that Kismet won't detect that if, you know, there's no traffic going on. Now, NetStumbler. NetStumbler works differently from Kismet in that it actively goes out looking. It does not set the card in monitor mode. Instead, it takes the card and it just starts sending packets out everywhere, trying to find all these things. Advantages, well, obviously, like I said before, with NetStumbler, it's gonna be able to detect these cloaked SSIDs because it's actively going out and pinging stuff and looking for it. So it's gonna generate that response. Disadvantage, you can only find networks within a range in which you can send data to it. With both programs, however, you do have the ability to make maps with a GPS device, and you can actually, you know, you can locate where each wireless AP is by triangulating the position and whatnot. Now, I mentioned for a brief second external antennas when you're war driving. Well, here's the thing. When you're war driving, you're in a car. Now, a car, basically, it's a giant metal box, and if you don't know much about antennas and whatnot, a signal doesn't really cut through inside a giant metal box very well. So your signal output's going to be greatly reduced. So if you have an external antenna, let's say a magnetic mount antenna, you can pop it on top, and from there, you're going to be able to pick up a lot more networks because it's not inside a giant metal box. There's also other alternatives you can make. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with the Pringles Yagi. Basically, the Pringles Yagi is, basically you take a Pringles can, you take some washers and an aluminum rod. You insert the aluminum rod with the washers spaced a certain distance, and then from there you hook up a connector, and then you run a wire from the connector to your wireless NIC card, assuming it has an external antenna port. Now, if you're interested in, say, building the Pringles Yagi, you should check out O'ReillyNet.com/CS/weblog/view/WLG/448. And by the way, that's O'Reilly spelled OReillyNet.com/CS/WEBLOG/VIEW/WLG/448. It's a good article on the Pringles Yagi. It tells you everything you need. Now, as far as parts go, I recommend a very good website That's fabcorp.com. That's fabcorp.com. So, excuse me, actually, no, that's fab-corp.com. Fab-corp.com. It's a great website. You can get all your pigtails and everything you need off there. So they also sell magnetic mount antennas. I've used them before. Highly recommend them. So another cool site you can check out if you want to, you know, look at some homebrew antenna type stuff. It's they've got basically they make parabolic antennas out of, say, you know, like cookware, like, and, you know, woks and things like that. It's www.usbwifi.orcon.net.nz. That's www.usbwifi.orcon.net.nz. It's a good website. They got some really cool stuff up there. Now, if you want to get more information about, you know, wireless and securities, securityfocus.org has some really good penetration testing stuff they've got up there. Also, you can check out the websites I mentioned before. Also, if you just Google it, you're going to get a lot of good information. That's about it for today's show. I got some email also from a free man. I want to say a thanks to him. Saying, you know, listen to the first four shows. He, like, thought the artificial intelligence one was interesting. Giving me some good, constructive criticism. You know, he didn't like how the intro music was a lot louder than, you know, my speaking voice. So I'll try and make sure that I can keep those, you know, pretty much balanced. So thanks for that feedback, free man. So today's closing music is actually going to be DQ Blizzard by MC Chris. And as always, his music is freely available off his website, mcchris.com. So yeah, DQ Blizzard, MC Chris, it's Ragweed. Peace.
My name is Jesse Chris, I walk up to my lyrics, let your word up, I word up, I word up, I word up, and you know.